And welcome to another episode of Go for Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer. The following is a recording that we did live at Able Brewing, our first live event. We'd appreciate some grace as we had some technical difficulties. You'll notice a hum throughout the recording. Please ignore that as best you possibly can, and if you're really annoyed, we're sorry. I guess you just really had to be there. Again, apologies for the hum. Enjoy the episode. All right, we want to thank everybody for coming out. This is our first attempt at recording in front of people, so if you can give us some grace, that'd be really appreciated.
Yeah, it's a little bit different than our two home offices and staring at screens and maybe each other's beautiful faces. As you can see from tonight, we apologize that we both do indeed have faces for radio, and now you get to see us in person. So we want to thank you for putting up with our faces for the next hour or so.
All right, yeah, so real quick, want to thank Abel, really generous host, obviously Anamale's, if you went to MN Ice Cream. You know, this has been really fun so far. It's a good opportunity to get together, just chat. Look forward to Go for Football. It's going to be a good time. I don't know if you guys know, but I had to talk Mr. Burns into doing this event. He said, I don't think two people will show up.
This is an actual true story. I didn't think that we could get really any people to come out to a brewery and kind of have us record about and talk some Gopher football. So it's a little bit different that we ended up selling over 100 tickets. I think we got 120, 130 people here tonight. So I do, from the bottom of my heart, want to thank each and every one of you. So it's just not me talking to one table. It's me talking to an entire room full of people. And because of your support, we were able to get some pretty good guests. We're going to have the GM up here tonight, a couple of position coaches. And then at the end of it, we're going to do a little question and answer. So I want you guys to think of your best question to grill each one of these guys sitting over there. I know they're sweating while eating their Animales barbecue right now. So we have a fun evening in store for you guys.
All right, real last thing. If you guys are familiar with the Goal Line Club, they sponsored our podcast last year. They're going to actually sponsor our podcast again this year. If you can find Lee Peterson, maybe Lee, like, wave wildly, Dan Miller, wherever you guys are, find those guys, talk to them, join the Goal Line Club. It's a good way to support Gopher football. I think anybody would admit that's the best way to support Gopher football. So thanks, guys, for showing up tonight.
And then we also want to thank two people from the Gopher football place, Paul Rovnat, the media liaison, for giving us these wonderful guests tonight. And then I also want to thank Garrett Chernoff, who's going to be our guest tonight as well, being able to put this all together. So if we can we get a big round of applause for all the people here that were able to help set this up.
All right, so our good friend Ryan James is a big fan of the Cleveland Browns. If you can notice, he's wearing a shirt tonight. His favorite website, cleveland.com, had a poll about how the West is going to finish up this year. They actually have the Gophers finishing in sixth, I think.
That's wild.
Yeah,
that is
wild.
Absolutely wild to me. You look at the projected order of the seven teams in the Big Ten West this year, and frankly, I just think it's just very lazy. I mean, you look at across the Big Ten West this year, and you look at Minnesota, you look at Wisconsin, Iowa, Northwestern, all the different teams, and you kind of look at how the schedule plays out. You look at the different facets of each one of the team, what they have returning, what they don't. And for Minnesota to finish sixth in a national media poll, first of all, I'm not surprised because no one really pays attention to Minnesota. But I think I'm going to lay out here in a bit why folks are going to have to this year.
All right, so let's talk first. Our hated rivals to the east, Wisconsin. As far as I'm aware, they're breaking in a new quarterback. They've got a pretty tough schedule as well. That's what at least I've seen.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you've heard as well, but I think Minnesota beat Wisconsin last year.
Did they really? Did they really? I don't think they just beat him. I think they actually kind of walked all over him.
You know, we've talked about this on numerous podcasts, but how sweet was it to watch a Minnesota team go into Madison and then absolutely dominate a Wisconsin team at their own game throughout the entire game?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Pretty fun.
Well, wasn't it the Wisconsin player who also said, we gave them the game?
Yeah, something like that. I didn't really pay attention to it. It was such an idiot comment.
So Wisconsin this year is a little bit different. You mentioned it. There is no more Alex Hornibrook, unfortunately, for Joe Rossi's defense to pick on all day. They are going to be potentially breaking in a brand new quarterback, potentially a true freshman by the name of Graham Mertz. We'll see how it plays out there. But you also look at their crossover games. For once in our lifetime, Wisconsin gets a terrible Big Ten schedule, and Minnesota finally gets the one it seemingly that Wisconsin had for so many years. You look at what Wisconsin has to play for their crossover games. They have Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State. Those are the three top projected teams in the Big Ten East, three of the top, arguably, 10 teams in the country. And here's me playing the world's smallest violin for the world's saddest song that the Badgers finally don't get a very easy schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's actually transition, talk a little bit about our neighbors to the south. This is the Iowa Hawkeyes. I don't know if you noticed, but they had a couple of guys drafted in the first round. They happened to play the same position, and so they might be a little depleted there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Iowa does offensively without their two first-round draft picks, that being Noah Fant, that being T.J. Hockenson. I'm sure folks here remember how they were able to kind of move the ball well against Minnesota last year with those tight ends. Well, now you don't have two first-rounders, and you really don't have a lot coming back that's proven. And then you also look at Iowa's schedule this year. Their crossover games aren't very easy as well. They have Michigan, they have Penn State, and they also have tough road games against Iowa State, Wisconsin, Northwestern. Again, I think that Iowa's going to be a legitimate team. It's a Kirk Ferentz team. They're going to win 7-8 games every year. But again, I think 1-6 in the Big Ten West is going to be very, very close.
All right, let's talk about the most hyped team in all of college football possibly this year. This is the Nebraska Cornhuskers.
That's going to be the college football playoff contending Nebraska Cornhuskers to you somehow. They're going to go from winning 8 games total the last 2 years to now in the college football playoff.
Yeah, and you know, they do have a pretty quality quarterback in Adrian Martinez. He's back at the helm this year. But you know, what is Nebraska going to see in their crossover games and their schedule?
Nebraska is a one-man offense in Adrian Martinez. I mean, he is, I think we'll talk about it with some of the Gopher coaches here tonight, he is an absolute dynamic player. I mean, there's a reason he was very highly touted coming out of high school. He performed extremely well against the Gophers last year down in Lincoln. But they also have a very conducive schedule to what national pundits think. I mean, you look at Nebraska's schedule this year, they get Wisconsin at home, Iowa at home, Ohio State at home, Northwestern at home, and their two toughest road games are against the Colorado team in year one that's not projected to do well. And then there's that old game up here in Minneapolis, which could decide a lot of things in the Big Ten West come mid-October. But if Adrian Martinez goes down, of which he's missed time, their quarterback, each season, even going back into high school, that's a completely different team. And, oh, by the way, the Nebraska Cornhusker defense still can't stop anyone.
They're the black shirts, though.
The black shirt, yeah. Everybody wants the Nebraska of 1990, yet here we are in 2019, and that ain't happening. So, I mean, Nebraska's a legitimate contender this year. I mean, we want you to know that. But for them to go from 8 wins the last 2 years to potentially in the college football playoff, come on now.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Purdue, the Jeff Brom-led team. He spurned his alma mater, or his hometown in Louisville to stick around.
He did.
And they'll be back with probably their dynamic offense. I forget the wide receiver's name, but he was just electric.
Rondale Moore. By the way, we're not going to talk about Illinois tonight. They're not going to factor in. The Fighting Lovie Smiths are having a tremendous amount of time trying to recruit because everybody knows that's a sinking ship. And I'm not projecting things to go well for the Fighting Lovie Smiths of Illinois this year. But Purdue is a team that, I mean, that's known as the Joe Rossi game, where Purdue comes in white hot. They'd scored 30, 35-plus points in 6 of their last 7. Rob Smith gets fired. Joe Rossi takes over on a short week against a white hot offense. And I think most of you were probably there at TCF Bank Stadium, where through 3 quarters, Joe Rossi on a short week allows 3 points. And I think 100 total yards, Purdue ends up with 10 points on the game. I mean, Jeff Brom is going to want to stick it to PJ. I've heard some things that Jeff Brom may not be the biggest PJ Fleck fan in the world, but in that same respect, I wouldn't be a PJ Fleck fan if I just went into TCF Bank Stadium and had a team put 40 on me.
All right, how about you pitch me what is the story that the Gophers can win the Big Ten West, right? So, I have to do in my job a lot of times convince people, you know, that we have a viable technology, et cetera. Now you pitch to me how the Gophers are going to win the West.
Well, I've talked about this a lot on GopherIllustrated.com. By the way, shameless plug, if you haven't gone to GopherIllustrated.com yet, you should probably go check out the content there. But the case for Minnesota this year is, I think the large part of it has to do with the schedule. You look at the schedule this year for Minnesota, especially in their crossover games. You're not facing the Ohio States, the Michigans, the Michigan States. You get Rutgers and Maryland. Rutgers is an absolute dumpster fire. Maryland's in year one of a program, even though Maryland has given Minnesota a tremendous time trying to figure out how to stop that offense the last couple of years, but they're in year one. Year one Big Ten coaches haven't traditionally done well. And then you get Penn State at home after a bye. I mean, the rest of the schedule, I mean, if you can just set yourself up to be competitive in November, I mean, how fun would it be, folks? This is a Minnesota team that's 6-2, 7-1, 8-0, heaven forbid, going into November. I mean, that'd be frankly unprecedented, and I think it's a realistic thing just because of the way the schedule sets up. You get Wisconsin at home. You get Penn State at home. You get Nebraska at home. I mean, these are all teams that you're going to want to play at home, some of them in a little bit colder weather, where I think this team showed last year that they kind of succeed in colder weather. They're not afraid to play in the cold. They really embrace that. And now they're going to have to go down into Iowa and win, which, Luke, do you know when the last time was Minnesota won at Kinnick Stadium?
No, I don't.
1999. So it's been a while since Minnesota went down into Iowa. They're going to have an opportunity to do that in November. But the rest of their schedule, I mean, your toughest games are all going to come in November. You have Northwestern, Penn State, Wisconsin. I mean, you're going to have an opportunity to place yourself very competitive. You also have Kirk Ciarrocca returning. Now, I'm as high on Kirk Ciarrocca as I think anybody is in the Gopher media, just what he's been able to do with this offense from year one to year two. He turned down Auburn after the 2017 offseason to go be their offensive coordinator. He turned down West Virginia last year to go be their offensive coordinator. I mean, you're talking about teams in the SEC and in the Big 12 that traditionally like to score a lot of points, and your offensive coordinator is coming back for year three with two quarterbacks that both started games. I think the statistic is, running back-wise, Minnesota has over 6,000 collegiate rushing yards coming back. 6,000. I mean, that's an astounding number.
And that's a few.
And I think maybe the biggest thing is people forget about Rodney Smith. Rodney Smith is a tremendously talented running back who has run behind some really poor offensive lines and some offenses that weren't particularly great. Now, Rodney comes back healthy. Rodney comes back behind what I think is going to be his best run-blocking offensive line. He comes back to what is going to be the least loaded boxes of his career. This isn't going to be Chris Streveler against San Jose State in 2015, where we're running the wishbone from 1922. I mean, we have an actual vertical passing attack with number one Tyler Johnson, who he's as special as I've seen a Gopher receiver since I think Eric Decker. Just the way he's able to create separation. Rashad Bateman set a lot of freshman records last year. You know, maybe Minnesota will use the tight end this year. Looking at Clay Patterson, the tight ends coach here. Minnesota's got a couple of tight ends coming back. They've returned potentially four starters on the offensive line if you count in Curtis Dunlap. I just think so many things break well for Minnesota, starting with the schedule, that, yeah, Minnesota's going to have to go into Fresno State early. This is a Jeff Tedford team that has won 10 games back-to-back seasons. Yes, they lose a lot, but that's still going to be a difficult game for Minnesota. I think it's like a 9:30, 10 p.m. Central start.
That's going to be tough.
That's a little bit different.
I have an infant child. I don't know. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, so you're definitely not going to be.
Let's talk a little bit of defense, right? This, you know, the Purdue was probably the turning point of that game when they handed the reins over to Joe Rossi. So tell me a little bit about that. I know he stuck around, got the DC job. What else can we expect on defense?
I mean,
defense?
We've talked about Joe Rossi so much on this podcast already, where Joe Rossi's audition tape to say, why should I be the full-time defensive coordinator? You look at Minnesota's three wins to end the season last year. You have Purdue being a spread team. You have Wisconsin being a 2-3 tight end team. And then you have Georgia Tech being a triple option team. Folks, you literally and figuratively can't get three any more different offenses to try and game plan against, to try and figure out how to stop. And Joe Rossi did that in each one of those games, and Minnesota came away with victories in all those games. Now Minnesota gets an entire offseason with Joe Rossi to try and figure out, what do I want to be for a defensive identity? And again, I'm assuming none of the coaches are going to tell you here tonight, but I'm assuming that Minnesota is going to throw a lot of different looks. You're going to see some 4-3, you're going to see some 3-4, you're going to see some 2-4-5. I mean, you're going to see a lot about what this defense could do. I don't know how much you're going to see Carter Coughlin as a linebacker, even though that's one of the most talked about things probably on this podcast, but you still have Thomas Barber coming back, a guy that has played a lot of football for Minnesota. Is this the year Kamal Martin figures it out? He's flashed, and then it's not been consistent. I think there's a lot of things where you can see maybe Kamal Martin comes into that role, and then in the secondary we'll get to talk to one of their coaches tonight. I mean, the way Coney Durr ended the season, the way that Chris Williamson ended the season, you get Antoine Winfield back, and luckily for Minnesota, they don't play Maryland until late October. So Antoine Winfield can't have a freak injury against Maryland in the first quarter for the third straight year. And if that happens, they at least get him for eight games. But I just think that this is if Minnesota is going to compete in the Big Ten West, it's going to be this year. Wisconsin's down. Iowa's going to be Iowa, win 7-8 games. And I just think the way the schedule plays out, the way that Minnesota has a lot of returning production, we should be talking about a team in November that you're extremely excited about, that is going to be in the thick of the things. And I was talking about this with a couple people tonight. How sweet would it be if that final game of the season, it's Minnesota versus Wisconsin, and if Minnesota wins, they're in Indy? I think that is an absolute realistic possibility. Call me a homer, call me whatever you like. I just think that that's very realistic with what Minnesota has coming back. They're obviously going to have some guys stay healthy, and most of you as Minnesota sports fans know that staying healthy for an entire season for a Minnesota sports team, especially to key players, it hasn't exactly been conducive in recent years. But if things break right, and I think that they can, I mean, we're talking about a team that is going to be legitimately competing in the Big Ten West, and one that you're going to be proud to wear your Gopher gear at work on Monday morning around the water cooler. Garrett, welcome to the podcast. Your first time, and actually live. I'm Luke, by the way. We should introduce each other.
Garrett, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, super fun.
Garrett, I'm Brian. We've never met before. We've had no interactions before in my entire life. So for those of you here in the audience tonight, Garrett Chernoff here is the general manager of the Golden Gopher football team. And I know a lot of folks are probably sitting here tonight knowing that Rick Spielman is the general manager of the Minnesota Vikings. Now, you being the general manager of a collegiate football team, I'm sure it's a little bit different. So if you can, you know, what is kind of your role for this football team as the general manager, and really how many different hats do you wear?
Well, I need to with how bald I'm going, Ryan. I need to wear hats all the time. But in my role of general manager, I kind of run all the off-field of the program. You know, recruiting, definitely, with a focus on that, but overseeing development, operations, really making sure Coach Fleck has everything he needs to run the program the way he wants to run it.
So, I mean, we talk a little bit about recruiting and my lifeblood. I'm not sure if you've heard of GopherIllustrated.com or 24/7 Sports in your life, is recruiting. And trust me, I know that you can't talk specifics, but I do want to talk a little bit about the Summer Splash that you guys just had back in June. And for those of you who don't know, the Summer Splash was the name of the big recruiting weekend that the staff had. I believe it ended up netting over 10 verbal commitments, including a lot of guys with a lot of different offers, a lot of stars. Why was that so successful, the two different visits you had back in June, and what kind of do you attribute that success to?
Well, June was a historic month for Gopher recruiting. We had 16 commitments in June.
That's got to be a record.
Has to be. I asked you to look it up. Never did. So it was an absolutely historic month. The Summer Splash was a huge, huge part of that. You know, they changed the NCAA rules about a year and a half ago to allow us to bring recruits in on official visits in April, May, and June. That's huge here at Minnesota. I mean, everyone in this room knows what Minnesota's like in the summer. It's the best place in the country. It really is. And for us to be able to show recruits what that's like is a game changer for us. You know, we identify very early in the recruiting process exactly who we want, exactly who we're going for, and that's a testament to our coaching staff. They know exactly what they're looking for at their positions. We have elite communication amongst all the levels, whether it be our personnel department. Each coach, you know, each coach has an area. So if Clay Patterson's recruiting the Texas area, which I don't know if you guys have been paying attention, is totally changed for us. We've gotten three commitments in this class. We brought in three kids from Texas last year. Been huge for us. And he's looking for a corner. He knows exactly what Rod's looking for in a corner. So we evaluate really early. We identify really early. And we go get what we want, which is different than a lot of schools in the country who kind of wait to see who offers who, where kids are stacked up. We know exactly who we want. We go get them. We set them early for official visits. Had them here in June, had two gigantic visits. And when we got the kids we wanted, we're able to do so many things you can't do in Minnesota in December in the season. We're on the lake. We're at Coach Fleck's Lake House. They're on a boat with Coach Fleck's Lake House. They're all through the city. We did a, you know, we really sell, because it's very accurate. Minneapolis is an unbelievable sports town, whether it be the Gophers, the Vikings, the Twins, the Wild, the Timberwolves. We did a whole tour of all the different stadiums. We were at Target Field. We were at Target Center. We were over there at U.S. Bank Stadium, which is such an unbelievable facility. And kids were able to see, wow, this is different than what everyone tells me Minnesota's light. It's huge for us.
I mean, you've been with PJ going back to his Western Michigan days, and you know, me being a recruiting guy, one of the things I'm most curious about is his recruiting. And I mean, the philosophy seems to be, for the majority of his recruiting class, he wants to have it done before the season starts. You know, what's kind of the thought process behind that? And would you agree with that's kind of the way PJ wants to operate?
You know, it's not a race. You know, we're not saying, hey, we need this many commits by this date. We want to fill up. That's not what it is. It's really, we're a very niche program. We're not what Minnesota's been. We're not what other schools are. We're very, very different. We love being different. And we can identify really early who's for us. And kids know right away whether this row the boat culture is for them or if it's not for them. And I think that allows us to get earlier commitments because it's not a real feel out process. They know if they like the row the boat culture or if they don't and if they need it. And those are the kids that really find themselves committing early. And it's not like a target to commit early, but we end up having it because of what we have here.
And I know for, you know, some of the other fans of Big Ten schools, I've been in PJ Fleck's office, but I want to ask you as a guy who's in there daily, is there actually an hourglass in PJ Fleck's office that when a recruit gets in there, he flips over and it says, you have this X amount of time to commit or it's gone? You know, again, I've been in there. I've never seen an hourglass, but you know him much better than I.
There's no hourglass, Ryan, I promise. I've heard that a lot, though.
All right, so, I mean, back to recruiting. We talked a lot about, or you did at least, that this past recruiting weekend, or back in June, that I know one of the big points that the kids were telling me that you were selling was you want to sell this Minnesota sports market, this Twin City sports market. Why were you trying to do that, and how did you try to convey that to them?
Well, people want to play somewhere where it matters, where it really matters. And we have such unbelievable fans here in the greater Twin Cities area than throughout the state of Minnesota as well. And it's also things that they like doing while they're on campus. I went to the Twins game last night, and they had $5 student tickets. I saw three different players on our team I had no idea were going, just hanging out at Target Field last night. Where else in the country can you do that? It's really a special place that we have at the University of Minnesota.
Back to recruiting, I mean, in the trenches, I mean, offensive, defensive line, to me, is where you win in the Big Ten. Especially that's where Minnesota has struggled when they haven't found a tremendous amount of success. Now, you look at recruiting. In 2019, you brought in seven combined offensive and defensive linemen. You can talk about them. I know you can't talk about the seven that you have committed on offensive, defensive line, but you look at some of the recruiting battles that you've won in recent years. You look at Keontae Shad. You're able to beat out a college football playoff contender in Oklahoma. Rashad Chaney had been committed to Alabama and Georgia at different times in his recruitment. MJ Anderson, a kid from St. Louis that garnered a lot of attention as well. Why are you guys having so much success winning these specific recruiting battles? Because I can tell you as a guy that's been following Minnesota recruiting for at least this decade, defensive line specifically is a place Minnesota has struggled in. I think you've seen why Wisconsin has been so successful over Minnesota. Well, that changed last year. And why are you guys having so much success in recruiting on the offensive defensive line?
Well, first of all, offensive and defensive line recruiting is the hardest in the country. Those are the two hardest positions to recruit, period. They always have been. They probably always will be because either you're big enough or you're not big enough. But why we've had success? Well, you mentioned Keontae Shad. You look over there at Clay Patterson, who was his primary recruiter. And it's about building genuine, true relationships. You know, and I mentioned earlier, we're not for everyone. We're very, very different. If you're looking for very different, you are interested in coming to Minnesota if you like what we have to offer. You know, we don't have to be for 400 kids a year. We have to be for 25 elite kids. And I think that's maybe why we're getting kids that haven't chosen Minnesota in the past, that are choosing Minnesota over places that Minnesota didn't get kids over before, because we have something different. But it's a tireless effort by our entire staff, specifically our coaches in their areas and their positions, that really just their number one thing is recruiting every day. And obviously it starts at the top with Coach Fleck.
You've taken a lot of kids in recent years, you know, 25 to I think 23. And in this class, I believe there's 22, 23 commitments. When you're trying to look at how to balance all those numbers and try to make sure that you're at the 85 at all times, you're one of the main parts in that. So how difficult is it to try and say, okay, this is where we're at number-wise, this is where we need to be? How difficult is that?
It's incredibly difficult in today's college football landscape. You look at the NCAA transfer portal, which started just under a year ago, which has increased attrition across the country. You have to do a lot of projecting. You have to know your roster really, really well. No one's better at balancing numbers than Coach Fleck. You know, he really is, and it's a staff effort, but I think it's worked really, really well for us, whether it's at Western or here at Minnesota.
So my last one for you is, again, one of the roles of you being general manager is you have to deal with all the crazy travel. So for folks who don't know, when Minnesota beat Wisconsin last year, of which, by the way, can I get another round of applause for Minnesota beating Wisconsin? After you guys won, what people may not know is for the next 3 weeks, the coaches didn't get to see their better half, didn't get to see their wives. They were on the road traveling. How difficult is it to try and figure out, okay, Clay Patterson's going to be in Texas. Rod Chance is going to be in Georgia. I have to make sure their flights are here, their hotels are here. But then just all the crazy different stories that happen when you're dealing with teenagers, how difficult is that to try and maintain at all times?
Well, I'll say this. Nothing was crazier than January of 2017 when we got here and we had 3 weeks to put together a recruiting class with members like Tanner Morgan, Mo Ibrahim, Jake Paulson, Blaze Andres, Boye Mafe, Asesio Tomewo. It was a really elite class for us put together in 3 weeks. Nothing will ever match how crazy that was. We were hiring coaches on the spot, sending them from their home to go recruit somewhere. But as we look at it now, December recruiting with this early signing period is insane, but it's very exciting. There's a lot of strategy. You know, there's all these different rules. We're only allowed to see a kid once a week. Well, when do we want to see him? Maybe it's an uncommitted kid. He's planning on visiting Georgia on Friday. We got to be home Thursday night to have our best chance, for example. So there's a lot of strategy involved. It involves a lot of people, but it's always fun.
All right, so I got one question for you, Garrett. I heard you quickly spew out a couple really complicated names, right? Most of the people listening to this podcast know that I struggle with names a lot, especially pronunciation. So
it's brutal.
You got any techniques for like the Boye Mafes, the Ezio Otumu, like those kind of names for me? I just need some tips because I'm really struggling.
Well, because Burnsy already gave Paul Rovnak a shout out earlier, I'd recommend going to gophersports.com. And they have a phonetic pronunciation of each one of our student athletes.
Ah, perfect.
It's right at your fingertips. All you had to do was go to the website, Luke. Put in some effort, will you? Jiminy Bupkis. All right. Garrett, thank you for coming tonight. Thank you for giving these people your time. We greatly appreciate it.
Row the boat.
All right. So next up, we are going to have the tight ends coach, a position that Minnesota forgot that they had all of last season. And for him to answer your questions is the man from the deep south himself, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Clay Patterson.
All right, Coach, thanks for joining us. We're excited to have you here. This is actually you're the very first coach to join the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast, so
no
kudos
pressure
to you. I don't think there's a plaque or anything we can give you, but you know, no pressure. You got to perform now.
Somebody once said, "You're not first, you're last." So I'm first, baby. Let's go.
All right, Ricky Bobby. All right, so one of the things that I want to get into is your background. I mean, you've been here 2 years now, but you're kind of coaching tree to get here is a little bit different. You started in the junior college ranks. And for those of you who don't know, when Clay was an offensive coordinator, his offenses broke 28 individual and 17 team passing records at Texas A&M Kingsville. And then when he was at Trinity Valley Community College down in Texas, his offense broke the all-time yards per game in any level of college football with an absurd number of 656 yards per game. All right, so you know how to put up yards, you know how to put up points. Where the heck did you learn that style of football, and why was it so successful where you were?
Well, when you're in junior college, we don't have guys like Garrett, so I put my own stats in. So, you know, you just doctor it up, but it's good, man. You know,
typical Clay.
Yeah, it's but no, I was, you know, being in Texas, and I was at Texas A&M Kingsville, and that's when the RPO stuff started with Art Briles at Baylor in Houston, and was very intrigued with doing some of that. My tree of coaching is it kind of goes like this. There's not really any branches going off. People I coached with didn't move on to the higher level. So when I got to junior college, I was able to get in with Art Briles at Baylor and talk to him. And actually, he didn't talk to me. He put me in a room and said, watch some film. And we came up with a system of offense that it changed junior college football, and it was very successful. But it really isn't what you do. It's how you do things. And I think how we played the game with tempo and the way our kids played The physicality we brought to the spread offense really kind of took us over the top. And we had some great players, you know, and some guys that are hungry. And the thing that you see at junior college level is guys that are very hungry. They're trying to prove themselves for whatever reason they're there. And that's what happened. It was the kids and how we did things.
For your final stop before you got here to the University of Minnesota, you were at Northeastern Oklahoma A&M, which I'm not sold is an actual, legitimate, real place, even though you call it NEO. And when you were in your final season there as the head coach, program goes 9-3. You get your first conference championship since 2003, and you played in your first bowl game in, I think, 5 years at the time. And that was in year two at a junior college program. How did you turn around the program so quickly?
Well, you know, for us, like, that was home for me, Oklahoma. It's the only junior college in the state of Oklahoma.
Where is it? I'm assuming in northeastern Oklahoma.
Has anybody here actually been to Oklahoma? Anybody? Okay.
So, 10 people, actually. That's
just so you know, there are 4 people here that actually live in Miami, Oklahoma. My booster club president, he just walked in. Stacy Satterwhite and his family just came in from Oklahoma.
What are the chances that that happens?
How about that?
Just bringing people together here at Able Brewery.
Well, you know, but that's what it was all about for us at NEO is we had guys like Stacy that helped us, and I had a vision for what we wanted to do, and we called it the Division I of junior colleges. You guys have all probably seen Last Chance U at this point, being football fans, and what junior college football is, and we tried to make it something different, and we did, and with the help of guys like Stacy and great kids. But basically what happens in junior college is Coach Fleck always talks about year zero, year one, year two, and building a program. Well, in junior college, you get to do it a lot faster. You were talking about numbers with Garrett. In junior college, we get 85 scholarships, but I can turn them over like that. I don't have to worry about the NCAA or anything like that. If you come in and
if you're going to spend your time in Miami, Oklahoma, I ain't going to worry about it, is what you're telling me.
No, yeah, you can change it in and out really fast, and you get different players, and really it grew up. You know, kids grew up, and to put in perspective of what we did last year at Minnesota is we started 8 freshmen, okay, at one point last year. Is that correct?
I would assume it would be if you're selling me.
Okay, yes. So I think, Garrett, is that right? 8. Yeah. But I told Coach Fleck, I'm like, we're in a staff meeting. I was like, Coach, I won 4 junior college championships in 5 years because we didn't start freshmen. We started sophomores. We started redshirt sophomores that were in our program that grew up. And it's very hard to do to play with freshmen. And that's, we had kids grow up, buy into what we were doing, and the culture of what we were doing there. Really, I think, took off and really kind of helped connect me to Coach Fleck as well.
And so when you talk about Coach Fleck, I think a lot of people here are wondering what it's like to be courted by PJ Fleck, what it's like to go through an interview process with the walking Red Bull himself. And you got to see that firsthand in January of 2018. Now, if I remember the story correctly, I mean, your statistics speak for themselves. You were a coveted man coming out of the junior college ranks. But what was it like to be going through an interview process with PJ Fleck, and how did it end up coming down to, all right, Minnesota's the place for me?
Well, it's a very interesting story because we were in, my wife's from Houston, Texas, and we're down there for Christmas. It's January, and we're in Houston. And if you guys know anything about Houston, it's not cold ever, okay?
And when you say not cold,
like not over like under 60, it's not cold, okay? And so there was a hurricane that came through that year, and there was some flooding and all that. And we're there in January, and there was an epic, like, cold deal. And it froze in Houston. And there's a big waterfall off this church next to my wife's house, and it froze over. Like, it was, like, 15 degrees in Houston. And it, like, I was like, oh, the world's ending, okay? And then I get a call.
I'm waiting for you to say, then I got down on one knee, looked at Ashley, of which, by the way, can everybody turn to Ashley over here and say thank you for letting Clay come tonight. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Thanks, Ashley.
Thanks, Ashley. Yes.
And so it freezes over this weird deal, and then all of a sudden I get a call from a number. And as a junior college head coach, I don't answer my phone if I don't know the number. You got to leave me a voicemail because there's no telling what's going to be said.
Yeah, you're big time.
Yeah, and not big time. There's no telling what was going on. And so I get a call. Hey, it's PJ Fleck. You guys know And I get the voicemail, and I'm like, okay, he wants one of my players. And I'm like, they don't recruit junior college that much. And ended up, he wanted to talk to me about a job. And in typical Coach Fleck fashion, I went to the AFCA convention. I'd already taken an offensive coordinator job at a Division I school and said, I'm going to go interview with Coach Fleck. And at that point, Coach Fleck is a very unique guy, as you guys know. And everybody always asked me about Coach Fleck. Is Coach Fleck real? Is he this person? Is he that person? I said, he hired me. Okay. And what I mean by that is people don't hire me in this profession.
Why is that?
Because I don't have a pedigree of Division I football. I've never coached Division I football. But Coach Fleck is the kind of guy that understands what he wants in people and saw that in what we were doing with our culture and said, I want to interview that guy. And he interviewed five Division I coaches and myself and came out of it and hired me. And it was a very unique experience. You know, Coach Fleck's a unique guy. And going into it, I said this. I knew I had a job, which in this profession, you're blessed if you have a job. And I had a job. And I went in there, you know, I said, you know what? I'm going to spend an hour, and it ended up being an hour and like 45 minutes with Coach Fleck. And I'm going to be a better coach the day I come out of that. And I was. And, you know, and he is he's a very unique guy in that he feels that making people special and the opportunities you have, it's all about experiences with Coach Fleck. So as you guys sit out there and you're like, why the heck are these guys going to the WWE and watching wrestling when they should be getting ready for football? Well, he understands that life's about experiences. And, you know, he decided to hire me, and he's unique enough that he understood how big of a moment it was for me. And, you know, he wanted to tell me in person. And he kept me there, and him and his wife brought me in, and Heather, and made that moment very special for me. So kind of uniquely, my wife was not there, okay?
Dealing with a frozen waterfall back in Houston.
She's back home, and she was not there. And I said, Coach, so he's like, hey, you know, he keeps talking. We're sitting there. And I'm like,
you mean PJ Fleck likes to talk?
Yeah, he was talking. I'm like, all right. He's talking about Minnesota, how great it is, about all the things we're doing, row the boat, all this stuff. And I'm like, gotcha, Coach, gotcha. He's like, well, I want to offer you a job at the University of Minnesota. And then he kept talking about why I should come to Minnesota. I'm like, man, I live in Miami, Oklahoma, which is a great place. I love it. And I don't make very much money as a junior college coach. And he keeps talking and keeps talking. And then he talks about money, and he way overshot what he needed to. And I said,
You didn't tell him that, right?
No. Okay. I was like, okay, that's great. And then I'm sitting there, and I'm like, my wife is calling me. I'm like, he keeps talking. I said, Coach, I apologize. Can I go outside and call my wife real quick? And then I go out, and that was it, man. But that's the unique part about Coach Fleck, is that he understood the moment of what we had been through as a family to get to that moment, and he made it special for us. It was a really cool opportunity.
So I kind of want to go back to you being the tight ends coach now, because I think the number one question I got consistently every day, whether it was on the Twitter machine, the Facebook, Gopher Illustrated, was, why doesn't Minnesota use the freaking tight ends in the pass game? Now, I'm not sure if you know this, but in 13 games last year, your tight ends were targeted a total of whatever the number is you're thinking, it's too high. It's 10 targets in 13 games last year. So, what were your thoughts on the tight ends last year, Mr. Clay Patterson?
It was very unique. I think... you know, the year before that, I think my tight ends caught like 12 touchdowns, and we had 10 targets the year. You know, so it's very unique for me. It was a transition from, you know, as a spread guy with the RPO guy. Your tight ends are more receiving guys; they're big receivers that you move down. So it was a unique experience for me. But what I told our guys, we had to earn it. You know, we weren't the most athletic guys last year. We weren't the most dependable guys at times, and they know that, and we had to earn it. And, you know, what we call it is the Sirocco pie. It's an Italian pie, and we want a piece of the pie. And to get that pie, we got to do our job in the run game. We have to get better athletically in space. We have to be dependable. And we did that in the spring. We put that in front of them and said, hey, let's go get some of this pie, and let's go get paid. And our guys really took some pride in it and got it. But I have a really unique room because – my guys are team guys. They're great kids. They're unbelievable kids. You know, most of them from the Midwest, and they want to be successful. They want us to win, and they'll do whatever it takes to do that. And if they get the ball, they're going to be real happy about it.
I've literally never heard Kirk Sciarocca refer to his offense as a pie. So the next time I see him, which is next week at fall camp opening, I'm going to be sure to ask him, what do you think Kirk Sciarocca's favorite kind of pie is?
I don't know. I think it's I don't know. He's Italian, so I know he likes meatballs.
It's definitely pizza.
That is so stereotypical.
It's definitely pizza,
right?
It's pizza pie.
Yeah, his meatballs are supposed to be world-renowned.
Is he not a cook for you? He hasn't had you and your lovely better half over for some Italian?
Yeah, we had some. It was pretty good. Yeah.
All right, so let's get back to football. They're not here to hear about Kirk Sciarocca's Italian exploits. Well, when I look at this 2019 tight end room, I think the two guys that I'm probably most excited about are two guys that played football last year for you, but now that they're expected to kind of see a bigger jump in production. I'm talking about Brevin Spanford from St. Cloud, top in-state kid at the time when he signed with Minnesota in 2018, and then Jake Paulson, two guys that were targeted in the spring game. Folks out, Brevin catch a couple of touchdowns. He's got a unique skill set for you. But when you look at Jake Paulson and you look at Brevin Spanford, two guys I expect to catch double-digit balls, not just get a total of 10 targets, Mr. Patterson, what makes them so special?
Well, the biggest thing you saw from our tight ends is, guys, the Big Ten and our tight ends are that you have to be a grown man. It's a grown man's league. The guys we're going against are big guys. I mean, they're 270, 280, and, you know, our guys were young. And when you're young and you're very tall, it's very hard to be strong in your hips. And our guys had to develop that and hit our strength. And what you saw was is that through the spring is they've gotten so much stronger. They've worked hard, and they're growing up. And when you grow up and you get stronger, they're a lot better, and they're more explosive in their routes and getting it done. But we expect big things out of those two guys. I mean, they both have really good hands. They're very smart, intelligent players. And they've shown that they can go out and catch a football. And we're different, though. You know, we put a premium on size for our tight ends. But they take pride in their ability to catch the football, and they've worked really hard at it. And we're very excited about those two guys catching the football. You know, but we're in a unique situation. We started four guys at tight end. Actually, I think five guys at tight end last year, because Brevin actually started a game last year. One game. Look back that up. He did. One game.
But you and get so, the opening snap?
Yeah, the opening snap.
Okay,
and then, and then we redshirted him after that. But it's unique because we have depth, and our guys, they work hard. They all are going to play. Co-Keefe has done an unbelievable job. He's kind of the leader of the room, a guy that's kind of undersung, I think, that does his job on a daily basis. But it's going to be a fun room to watch, fun to see them grow this year and continue to get that done.
Now, recruiting-wise, you've been tasked with the states of Texas, Oklahoma. I'm not entirely sure if you're familiar with the Oklahoma area at all, but you've won some recruiting battles in recent years. And when you look back to last class, Luke, I want to have you try to pronounce this guy's name. He's going to be a wide receiver for Minnesota this fall. And for that guy, you beat out Alabama. Legitimately, you beat out Alabama. I remember talking with the high school coach at the time. This is a guy that they really wanted. You beat out Texas A&M for everybody's favorite, the Chili's Hot, Mr. Tim Brewster at the time, who's a pretty good recruiter now at North Carolina. Now, Luke, can you pronounce his name before I give you, and more importantly, so, Clay gives you.
So, first of all, N to start?
Double
N in a row?
Yeah.
Okay.
Come on. You can do it.
I've heard that they call him Nam, so I'm going to start with Nam.
That is accurate.
Namdi Admin Majumere.
Clay?
I don't know. I'm just so bad at this.
Clay, can you pronounce his full name, or do you only know him as Nam?
It's Namdi.
Namdi what?
Adim.
Okay, keep going.
The hyphen usually gets dropped. I don't stop saying Namdi Adim. It's Nam.
All right, so Luke's not the only one that struggles with Nam.
They're hard.
So you beat out Texas, you beat out Alabama for Nam, and then you look at Keontae Shott, a guy that we talked about earlier. You beat out Mississippi State. You beat out Oklahoma. I mean, you being the primary recruiter on those two guys, I mean, we're talking to a bunch of Minnesota fans that aren't used to seeing a kid who had a legitimate Alabama offer choose Minnesota. What was different about Keontae and Nam that you knew that you could get them to come to Minnesota and, more importantly, stick with the Golden Gophers?
Well, they're both different situations, different cases. Well, the cool part about recruiting in Minnesota and for Coach Fleck is I know exactly what we can recruit. We don't recruit everybody in the country because only certain people fit our culture and what we want. And we're looking for people that want certain things in their life. And Namdi is a very unique case of, he's a first generation, Nigerian, and his parents migrated here from Nigeria. I don't even know if they speak English. And he was wanted to get out of Texas. He wanted to better his life. And it was a life decision for Namdi. He knew coming to Minnesota, being in our culture, would change his life forever. And that's why he chose us. And he saw that, and he saw the relationships. My wife was involved with it and the family aspect of what we were providing here. And he said, that's what I want. He felt like he has a skill set that can get him to the NFL wherever he goes. And he does, but it was a situation where that's what we look for. And our kids that we recruit here, that's what they see. And so Namdi, you know, he chose to come do that. And, you know, he's a big athletic kid that we're really excited about. Where Keontae was a kid that, you know, we recruit junior colleges differently at Minnesota. We don't recruit a ton of junior college kids. But when we do, we see our need in advance. And we get on them early, which makes my job easy. Because I know what kids in junior college go through. He's sitting there in the spring, and they don't get a ton of offers. We offer him. We bring him in. He commits. And then I just talked him through the whole process. I said, this is exactly what's going to happen. And being a junior college player.
And so what exactly happened for folks that don't exactly remember what happened when in October, November, and December when he got all this attention coming his way?
Well, first of all, like being a junior college player, the month of August, September, and October are extremely lonely. Okay.
What do you mean by lonely?
Being lonely, being that nobody really recruits junior college kids, so they panic and then they need them. And when you do that, then kids have like 2 weeks to make a decision. We developed a relationship with the kid early, and he stuck with us. You know, the fit with his parents, you know, his mom being from Wisconsin, he was born in Minneapolis. It was a good fit, and it's all about relationships. We developed a relationship, and again, he made a life decision. And he made a decision based on where he could better his life and not just about football. And that's what you'll continue to see from our kids.
All right, so the last one before you get you back to your people from Miami for some more Animales barbecue.
So just so we get it right, it's Miami.
Miami.
I got a question, though. How did the barbecue compare to, like, you know, Texas?
Because you're from originally where?
I'm from Oklahoma.
Okay.
But I spent, I think, 10, 12 years in Texas and in deep South Texas.
Okay.
So the barbecue here is very peppery, and it's
what's wrong with pepper?
Nothing.
No, it's, the way you said that. What's wrong with pepper?
It's a little different spice, but it's very tender. The ribs melted off the bone. It was awesome. So when you go to Texas, has anybody ever been from Texas or been to Texas very much? When you go to Texas, you get your barbecue is on a wax paper. If you go to a real barbecue joint in Texas, you're going to get wax paper.
Okay.
And then the meat's going to be on the wax paper, and you sit there and you eat. And, you know, in like deep South Texas, the barbecue sauce has a, it's like a more of a chunky tomato.
Okay.
Like a salsa. Very original deal. It's very different. If you ever go to deep South Texas, go get at a barbecue joint, and it's a different experience.
You a cornbread guy?
I am. I love cornbread. Yes. I do. Not jalapeno cornbread, I'm like, but, you know, it's not as.
You still threw me for a loop, and you said you didn't like a lot of pepper. I literally will put pepper on everything, and I will put an egregious amount on it. What's wrong with putting a lot of pepper on your barbecue?
I just can't do it, man. It's just a little much. But it was delicious. They did a great job. I loved it. It was awesome.
All right. Final one before we get you out of here. Yep. You being the tight ends coach, you've worked with this position for a long time in terms of just in and around the offense. Now, you've seen and worked around Big Ten tight ends. You've gone against them here for a year. If you were to recruit a tight end here to the University of Minnesota to a Big Ten school, what are the kind of the characteristics you're looking for in them, both physically and mentally?
Well, the biggest thing for us, we put a size on premium, at Minnesota. Because
so define size, because I think I know what you mean by size, but I'm guessing a 6'1" tight end in the Big Ten, probably not going to cut it.
Yeah, no, I couldn't have played here.
I'm 6'3" and a half.
Yeah, you got me beat. I was a 6'1" and a 6 foot and a half, 225. I would have got crushed. So
no, you're not that strong anyway.
No,
anyway,
it wouldn't have worked.
It's
6'5" plus, you know, and we look for kids that have growth potential. And, you know, Brevin Spanford, if any of you guys ever saw him in high school, I mean, his junior year he was 215 pounds, but he had a big frame and he could grow into that weight. And you know, you see a guy like Brevin who was 215, now he's 270, and you wonder, like, okay, that's what he's going through. If he's ever gained 60 pounds, it's tough. It's tough to move around. So we look for growth potential, size, and intelligence. Our guys line up at basically five different positions in our offense. They have to play special teams. They're high academic guys and character. That counts for us and guys that are very physical. You know, we take pride in being very physical in our position, being nasty. And getting after it. And so we put it on that. And then ideally, obviously, you'd love to have a guy that could do both. And our goal and our challenge in our room is to change our room. And we want to change the dynamic of tight ends here. We want to get back to where, you know, Minnesota had guys getting drafted and being the tight end of the year, where we can get guys that have size plus the speed to be able to do what we need to in the passing game. And I think we're transitioning into that. And hopefully after this year, we're going to see the difference in the type of guys that we're recruiting as far as nationally as tight ends.
So before I let you leave the stage, I need you to look each one of these people in the eye and tell them that Minnesota is not going to have one, but two tight ends catch double-digit balls this year. Clay, look at them in the eye. They mean it. They are very concerned about this tight end position. I need you to reassure them that Chiraka pie, you're going to get at least a slice of it this year.
I like my pie with ice cream on it. And we'll put a couple pieces of ice cream. We'll get some rock pie, Chiraka pie. We're going to get it. Our kids, what you're going to see, I think you're going to see a difference in our tight ends with the confidence. I think you saw that in the spring. They're confident kids, and they want to go do it, and they'll do whatever they got to do it. So if we do catch balls, it's going to only help us. It's going to help Tyler. It's going to help those receivers to get open, and I'm excited to see where it goes. And I think you're going to see a change in our offense, you know, and you've seen the development as we've gone. And Coach Chiraka is unbelievable at starting from scratch and developing offenses. And our offense is not designed to be an instant deal, because it's going to take a little bit, because there's a lot of detail to it. And this is when you're going to see our kids really come out of their shell this year and see some excitement that I think you saw at the end of the year last year. And you're going to see us run the football. And if, you know, Big Ten football, if you go at Wisconsin and you outrush Wisconsin and you outrush Georgia Tech, who are the top two leading teams in rushing in the country, and we did that in back-to-back weeks, and I think you'll continue to see that from us, and we take a lot of pride in running the football.
Well, I tried to get you to go on record anyway saying two double-digit tight ends, but again, Clay Patterson, ladies and gentlemen, we thank him for taking some time out right before fall camp. Clay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you guys for all coming out. This is unbelievable.
All right, so our final guest for the evening, before we get all three of our guests back up on stage for you to grill them with any and all questions, and I really hope you're thinking of some good ones to get these guys mumbling a little bit, trying to scratch their heads on how to answer it, is the new cornerbacks coach, Mr. Rod Chance. So ladies and gentlemen, meet your new cornerbacks coach, Rod Chance. Coach Chance, how's it been in Minnesota for the last few months?
It's been elite. I want to start off saying this, is that I'm not sure if it was the best idea to let me go last, you know, to enjoy the nice beverages that are here at this wonderful establishment.
Well, we can have some interesting answers together.
This might have been a setup, but I'm excited to be here. It's been a elite experience thus far, and I'm looking forward to continue the process forward.
I feel like it only took 48 minutes into this podcast before we had some Fleckenisms come out. I hope you're going to say we're going to change our pace in a necktie mentality. We're going to row the boat together.
I'm officially culturized here, you know?
You've been Flecknotized indeed. So for folks who don't know the Rod Chance story, you got your collegiate coaching career started a few years back when you went to Vanderbilt. You were under Derek Mason. You know, Mason's known to be in quite the defensive guru there. So what did you take away from your time out of Vanderbilt?
Well, I will say this. You know, my career in coaching started at Alpharetta High School.
Down in Georgia.
Yes, sir.
Nolan Edmonds' former high school.
It is. And I mention that because, you know, that time for me was just so important for me as a football coach. You know, having a high school mentality to do more with less. You know, I was a special education math teacher. Those are some of the things that ring true with me. So I'd be remiss if I don't, you know, mention those moments, those experiences, the blood, the sweat, the tears. You know, those are what brought me here today. So, you know, aside from that, you know, I had an opportunity to go coach the corners at Rhode Island. 30 days after I got there, after my wife and I were supposed to be getting married in April, I got a call from a guy by the name of James Franklin, offered me a job at Vanderbilt. So, you know, I went down to Vanderbilt, was there for a season. James moved on, obviously, to one of our opponents this season.
Yeah.
And, you know, lo and behold, Derek Mason walks through the door as a head football coach, and, you know, things started to change for me. In terms of, you know, what Derek Mason taught me or what did I get from that experience, you know, to be honest, it was more than just football. And to be honest, it was more about how to be a football coach, how to be a husband, how to be a better father when the time comes for my wife and I. It was really more about how to handle yourself off the field as a football coach, more so than a football. Now, the ball part of it was very huge portion of it. You know, I always thought that, you know, I knew a lot of football before I came into it. But I think Coach Mason helped me, one, realize that I did have the talent to do this in this profession. Two, he helped me really gather and compartmentalize the thoughts that I did have in terms of my technique, whatever my progression was schematically in terms of the defense. So, you know, Derek Mason's like a big brother to me. That's my guy. Love him to death. But I think the best thing he ever did for me was tell me to go to Southern Utah and do things on my own.
So I want to talk about Southern Utah, because what in the world are you doing going to Southern Utah to coach football? What is even the city that Southern Utah is in?
Well, Well, I will say this. Southern Utah was an awesome experience for me. I would not be here without that experience at Southern Utah. But it is in Cedar City, which is located 2.5 hours from Las Vegas. It was a very special place for me, and people thought that it was
Las Vegas is a very special place for you?
I would say Cedar City is a very special place for me. My wife would not think that Las Vegas is a pretty special place for me. But you talk about an opportunity to go to a program that prior to me getting there, they had already won the Big Sky Championship. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity for me to go and coach all four guys in the back end. I get there. It was a no-brainer for me just to have that opportunity. I was in the quality control role, graduate assistant role, and I just wanted my own opportunity, you know, to make my way in this profession. So the opportunity was easy for me to go on because I'm a big gambler on myself. I believe in my abilities, my ability, my work ethic, my how and what I do. So I went out there, and it was a great opportunity for me and my wife, both of us. And, you know, I think the biggest thing I take from there is that we had an awesome culture, you know, at the Southern Utah University. Whether it would be, you know, small Mormon town, we did not have a lot of resources in that league. We probably had the lowest endowment of the conference. But we had a culture and a mindset to do more with less. And the kids were awesome. It was a great experience. We played good defense. And, you know, I think those things led to me being here.
Well, you look at your Southern Utah defense. I'm sure folks have no idea that, number one, you were at Southern Utah. Number one, you were the defensive coordinator there when you guys won the Big Sky back in 2017. Your defense that year notched 77, count them, 77 tackles for loss. You had 29 turnovers, you being the head mastermind behind that defense. And you're still a young guy. Why did you have so much success, especially getting into the backfield and creating havoc?
I'll tell you what, my relationships have always been solid with young men. And I think first thing first when you're coaching kids is that you got to give them the buy-in to you as a coach. You know, to believe in you, that you know what you're doing, that your thoughts are genuine, that you got the best interest at heart. I think that was the first thing. I was a little bit different. You know, I came from down south. I'm going out west to Utah. And I got a little bit of Southern twang to me. You know, I'm fired up. I'm yelling. I'm raising my voice at practice. And I think the kids really related to it. So we'll begin that. Now, the next thing I will say is that we had a really, really good defensive line. I'm not sure if you guys know about the state of Utah. Obviously,
assure you there's maybe one person here that knows anything about the state of Utah in terms of defensive linemen, and that's you.
That's probably me. But I was blessed to walk into a room that had a really good defensive line. We had really good coaches around us. And really, just the chemistry was really good amongst the staff. We didn't have much to do in Cedar City, Utah. So a lot of extra time watching film, devotion, you know, to really devote our time to our craft. So those kids were great. The coaching staff were really great for me, and I'm really appreciative of my opportunity there and my time there.
And so last year, you're out at Oregon. And then this past, in January, you're able to be courted by Coach Fleck. Now, again, Clay told his story about what that's like to be interviewed and kind of courted by PJ. What is your own unique story about what it's like to have PJ Fleck, not necessarily the coach, but the guy that's trying to hire you?
I tell you what, you know, it's something to say about Coach Fleck, you know, who he is as a person, you know, his character, you know, his integrity and his values. I was raised with the meritocracy mindset. And at times in this profession, it's more so of a referral business. So the opportunity that I had, you know, I woke up, my agent called me at 6 o'clock in the morning Pacific time. I'm like, what is going on? Something is happening for me to get a phone call at 6 o'clock in the morning. Where Morgan and I live, we did not have great service in Oregon. The internet is very, very bad out there. So I'm trying to figure out, like, who is calling me? What's going on at this time of day? So I get a text message from my agent saying that, hey, PJ Fleck is about to call you. And I'm 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, what? Huh? Okay. Whatever. So then he sends me a text message, you know, of him requesting the number, you know, et cetera. And I immediately jumped out of bed, and I wake my wife up. I was like, somebody said that PJ Fleck's about to call me. I'm about to get up. So I get up, I get in my car, and I drive a mile down the road to the local McDonald's, and I sit there, and I wait for Coach Fleck's phone call.
What a All right, then.
So I go, I order myself a cup of coffee, and I sit and wait on the phone call. You know, the phone call comes through. Coach Fleck said, how you doing? PJ Fleck. We talk, and really his first question was, are you interested in staying at Oregon, you know, as an analyst, or are you interested in coming here to be the corners coach at the University of Minnesota? I said, Coach, you know, I'm a football coach, and I'm looking for an opportunity to get back on the football field. He's like, all right, don't want to waste my time nor yours. Shortly after that, that was a six-minute conversation. I remember the time.
PJ Fleck is capable of having a six-minute conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first tonight.
6 minutes. That's all it took. So after that six-minute conversation, you know, I proceed to go to work at the University of Oregon. I get a phone call at 9:30 from Joe Rossi. Joe Rossi FaceTimes me and we kind of do like a little FaceTime interview, if you would. And I'm on the board. And he's in front of some high school in Ohio, you know, interviewing me as he's outside getting ready to go into school.
Technology in 2019, folks. Interviews via FaceTime in Oregon to Ohio.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's...
So that happens, you know, after I hang up the phone with him, literally 30 seconds later, Coach Fleck called me right back. I said, oh, that went well. So let's get you on here.
He said, I'm just imagining Joe Rossi calling PJ. Yep, okay, Fleck.
So Coach Fleck's like, yep, I heard you did an elite job. You know, I'm willing to get you in here. I want to interview you. I want to interview you tomorrow, and I got to go on the road recruiting. I get a call from Garrett later on. He said, hey, Rod, you think you can make a 2:30 flight out of Portland? Now, for you guys that know, I haven't been to Oregon, Eugene is probably 2.5 hours away from Portland. And I'm looking at my clock. I'm like, ooh, I got to go now. But there was no way I was going to tell him no. I was not going to tell him no that I couldn't make it for you to give you an opportunity to call someone else, you know, at any given any time. So I said yes. I proceeded to run and race to my house. I picked up the suit that I had. I don't care. I take pride in the suit game. You know, I really like to look nice. But nothing was clean. Nothing was how I wanted it. I didn't have time to really ask my wife for it. So I just grabbed the first thing I saw. It didn't match. I really didn't care. I got here.
Well, the fact that you still remember that it doesn't match, I'm going to tell you, it probably still bothers you to this day.
It does. It does. It was not my best first impression, if you would. But I got here at about 7 p.m. Coach Fleck interviewed me for about 4 hours. 3.5, 4 hours, and at the end of that interview, he extended the offer to the university.
So you accept, you're here this past spring, you're able to kind of see what you're going to be working with some of the cornerbacks. So again, I know that you've only gone through them with spring ball, but now going to fall camp next week, I want to ask you, you've got a couple of guys, and Terrell Smith, who was a true freshman last year, played for Minnesota. Coney Durr played some meaningful minutes for Minnesota last year as well. What about those two guys that you were able to see this past spring makes them special players?
I'll tell you, first things first, those are two incredible human beings. I think Terrell Smith is a really bright young man with a huge future in front of him. I think Coney Durr probably has fire under his belly like no other. And once you see myself, obviously I'm not the tallest guy, you know, so I see a little bit of myself in Coney. So, you know, I have a little soft spot in my heart for him. But being honest, man, I really like our entire room. You know, our room is working hard. It's really creating a competitive competition amongst us all. That I look forward to the competition. I think each of those players have an opportunity to play a significant role in our football team. You know, we just sort this deal out. You know, we'll see what Coach Fleck wants to roll out there, and we'll roll with it. But I'm excited about the group. They're all hungry. They're all humble. And they're all doers. They find solutions. They don't complain. They don't do any of these things. They really just come with a hard hat, ready to work. And whatever I ask of them, they've been more than willing to do.
So your corner room has seen three different coaches now in 3 different years. So when you look about trying to establish yourself to them, your technique, your philosophies, how difficult is that for guys that have heard different messages in the previous years?
Well, for myself, it's not difficult at all because I understand that this is a relationship business first and foremost. And, you know, I can really relate to that situation. When my freshman year in college, the coach who recruited me, he left after our first season and moved on to an FBS opportunity. For those of you who didn't know, I played SCS football at the University of Rhode Island. So I understand that, and I understand what that happens when you have a coach that you have a great relationship with, and he moves on for a better opportunity for himself and his family. But I think the only thing I can do is be genuine, be myself, you know, and really have an open lines of communication with the kids. You know, I think the consistency part, you know, just really with them being able to get comfortable. I mean, I think we're past that point. That's spending time with them. That's part of our program. You know, it's not just a football program. It's a life program. Meaning that they're going to see me experience myself with my wife, see us have this opportunity, see how I interact as a husband, you know, see how I interact, you know, with anybody else in my family, whatever the case is. So I think the best opportunity I can give them, but consistently, just being consistently myself. If I'm consistently myself and I'm that same person every day, giving them the elite work ethic, elite how every single day of what we're doing, they have no other choice but to respect it. And I think we're well on our way towards that.
So you've been at SEC schools, you've been at Pac-12 schools, you've been at Southern Utah, you've been at Rhode Island. When you look at a cornerback, now you guys have done well recruiting quarterbacks here in this class. I think you have 4 or 5 committed. When you look at the ideal cornerback that you want to recruit as a Big Ten corner to the University of Minnesota, what are you looking for?
I tell you what, when you mention those conferences, it almost kind of like surreal to me because all high school coaches, you know, I won't say all, majority of us aspire, you know, to get to the collegiate level. And I don't take it for granted that this opportunity was mine. But, you know, I can see 7, 8 years ago, I was really thirsty, hungry, you know, for anybody's opportunity to come coach collegiately. And as you know, in our culture, a hungry dog is a dangerous dog. You know, so I was very hungry to get into this opportunity, into this profession. So to see and look back now that I've worked in the SEC for coaches like James Franklin, Derek Mason, I had an opportunity to work for Mario Cristobal in the place of Oregon. It's almost, you know, I have to pinch myself at times. But in terms of the position, I think first and foremost, you know, the football is a part of it. You have to have that, you know, but I want to find the right individual, the right person, the right character that our personalities match, that he has the right work ethic about himself. That's first and foremost. But if we're talking about, you know, logistics, you know, or schematics or size and measurables, I think it's important as a corners coach that you have different types of bodies in the room. Yes, you want some. Everybody in America wants the long corners. But what happens when you go against people in this conference, you know, like a Rondale Moore, who's a 5'8", 5'9", 5'10", you know, and you need someone that's short and quick.
A little bit different.
So I think that it's important that, you know, you have variety in the room. Important that you have, you know, guys who may be 5'10ers. You might need a 6'2 guy that go against when we play Penn State. So I think it's a lot of opportunity having versatility in the room in terms of where your measurables are. I think the next thing has to be is that I want to have foot speed. Obviously, you can't play this position if you can't run and keep the top on the coverage. So, you know, we want to have length, we want to have speed, and definitely want to have hip fluidity. Now, for you guys that may not know about the corner position and what I mean by hip fluidity, that's just your ability to go from a back pedal, right, to opening your hips up and running. And it really sounds very easy, but it's very, very hard when the person is running forward full speed and you have to back pedal to match his pace or mirror his route. Most guys on offense, they're told where to go. Defensively, it's a reactionary position, so it's a lot more difficult in terms of athletically what you're asked to do in terms of your job description.
Luke, you got any more before we let the people loose on Mr. Chance, Mr. Patterson, and then Mr. Chernoff over there?
What do you think of Minnesota? You've been here for a little while. Are we nice people or what?
Well, I have learned about the Minnesota nice term. My wife and I were out one day. We learned about that. But I will say this. You know, I'm a kid that's from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I met my wife in Atlanta, and I've been working in Cedar City, Utah, and we're out in Oregon. Trust me, we are very, very happy to be in the metropolitan area. You know, we've done a lot of things. We fished. We've been to the mall. We've done a lot of different things. I'm looking forward to this opportunity here and really doing some elite special things that haven't been done here in a while. I'm fired up by this opportunity. Sky, you mom.